Education and committee meeting will now come to order. For the record, please remember to turn on your microphones for the roll call. Missy, will you please call the roll?
Chair Latvala.
Here.
Vice Chair McLean.
Here.
Committee Whip Andrade. Ranking Member Williams.
Here.
Representative Alupas.
Here.
Representative Arrington.
Here.
Representative Bell.
Here.
Representative Barrera.
Here.
Representative Bush.
Here.
Representative Fiennes.
Here.
Representative Harding.
Here.
Representative Hawkins.
Here.
Representative Punchowski.
Here.
Representative Lamarca.
Here.
Representative Mariano.
Here.
Representative Maney is excused. Representative McCurdy.
Here.
Representative Morales. Representative Trabulsi.
Morales, you didn't say here.
Did you call me?
Oh, present.
Representative Trabulsi. Representative Tuck.
Here.
Representative Valdez.
Present.
Thank you. Let the record show that a quorum is present. Please remember to silence all electronic devices, be recognized by the chair before addressing the committee of the presenters, and make sure your microphones are on after you've been recognized and when voting on a bill. In order to abide by our COVID guidelines, please remember to keep your face mask on at all times when speaking at the podium. This applies to members and the public. Members, today we have six bills on the agenda, and we will be starting with Representative Silvers on CS for House Bill 311 on public records assessments instrument, and you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. HB 311 is a bill that seeks to protect Florida's education system by ensuring the law provides the highest level of protection and exemption from public records law of assessment instruments and the materials used to develop those tools for the benefit of student learning outcomes as a state's accountability system. That is the bill.
Are there questions of the bill? There are no amendments, and there is an appearance card. Alexis, and I apologize, Khaled, why don't you come up to the podium so you can help us pronounce your name?
Alexis Khaled-Tayud.
And you're waving in support. You can remain up there. And you're waving in support?
Yes, sir.
From the Department of Education. Representative Lupus, did you have any questions for her, even though she's waving in support?
Yes, sir. I have a series. Is that okay?
Yes, sir. You're recognized.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Kaladi, it's great to see you. Thank you for joining us today. So what sort of examination and assessments would be protected under this public records exemption?
You are recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair Lavalle. Thank you very much, Chair Lupus. There are a series of examinations that would be protected. One would be the Florida Kindergarten Readiness Screener, the Department of Juvenile Justice Common Assessment, the Preliminary SAT and National Merit Scholarship Qualifying Test, the Florida Teacher Certification Examination, and Florida Civic Literacy Assessment for grade 11 and post-secondary.
Follow-up?
Yes, sir.
Is it your opinion that the Florida Kindergarten Readiness Screener should be used as an accountability metric in VPK accountability?
You're recognized.
What a great question, Representative Alupas. I think it's really important that we go back to our experts, the Department of Education, and provide you the best possible answer. May I provide a follow-up?
Absolutely.
Please provide that to the full committee. Do you have any other questions?
Just one follow-up, sir.
Yes, sir.
Who is the best boss you've ever had?
Chief of Staff Alex Kelly. Okay. No, it's Representative Lupus.
No further questions, sir.
Well, I was going to ask you if you enjoyed your current position more than your last position in the Florida House of Representatives, but I think you've made that one pretty clear. But it's good to have you here today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for the time, Chair Lavalle.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for being here. Kristen Whitaker, Board of Governors, State University System, is a proponent. Members, is there debate? Representative Silvers, you recognize the close.
That was rough. I'm going to wave close.
Thank you, Representative Silvers. Missy, please call the roll.
Representative Zalupas?
Yes.
Andrade? Arrington?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Barrero? Bush?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Hinchovsky?
Yes.
Lamarcus?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
Maney? McLean?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Morales?
Yes.
Trabulsi?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Chair Latvala?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays.
Members, by your vote of 18 to 0, CS for House Bill 311 will be reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Next, let's take up Representative Garrison's bill, House Bill 997, Public Records and Meetings, Post-Secondary Education Executive Search.
Thank you, Chair.
You are recognized.
Thanks, sir. Members, House Bill 997 seeks to ensure that Florida's sunshine laws allow our public universities and state colleges to attract the deepest, most qualified, and diverse group of applicants to serve in the critical role of president. Each state university and FCS institution is administered by a board of trustees that has many responsibilities, but perhaps none more important than the power to hire and fire university and college presidents. This bill would create an exemption to Florida's public records and open meetings laws for personal identifying information of applicants. This exception is narrowly tailored and would cease to apply at least 21 days before a meeting where finalist interviews are conducted or where board action is taken. It also creates requirements that any portion of board meetings occurring in the shade be on the record and recorded in their entirety, and that any portion of the meeting establishing applicant qualifications or salary ranges must take place in the sunshine. And as with all public records exemptions, this would be subject to the Open Government Sunset Review Act and would stand repealed in 5 years unless reenacted by a future legislature. Mr. Chair, that is the bill.
Thank you very much, Representative. Are there questions on the bill? Ranking Member, did you have a question? Representative Morales, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. I have just a little question.
Sure.
I just wanted to ask, did we, in the previous meeting that I had attended, I remember hearing something, well, in reference to having it considered for announcement of more than 21 days, and I was wondering if that was in consideration.
You're recognized.
Representative, currently the bill requires that there be at least 21 days prior to either a final to interviews with finalists or board action when the public records exemption would no longer apply. So as it currently is presented right now, the window is 21 days, and that does mirror the Senate companion.
Yes, ma'am. You're recognized.
Thank you, Sharon. The reason I bring this up is because I think that you may accept highly qualified individuals, but I still think that we should consider a little bit more, few more days to allow the message to be announced and this just kind of like disclose so that we can have a fair chance for other more participants. Thank you.
Is that, since we're in questions, is that something that you would consider?
Certainly, we'll have those happy to consider anything we can do to make a good bill better. There's a lot of factors that go into that, obviously, but we'll certainly be happy to have those conversations.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Is there any other questions, members? Ranking member, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question, the 45 days that Representative Morales is mentioning, it was brought up in the committee beforehand. At this point, have you had a conversation with that representative, or you're just willing to consider it as of this committee?
You're recognized.
I believe one of our fellow colleagues mentioned one of his reasons for voting down against the bill when it was a couple stops ago was concerns about the 45-day process. I have not had a follow-up conversation with that specific representative, but I have with a number of members of the committee, as well as members of the Board of Governors and others, Council of Presidents and others. We try to work through this. Right now, it's 21 days, but like I said, we're not wedded to that number. We just want to make sure we provide sufficient safeguards to make sure things can move forward efficiently, and also make sure the public has ample time to know who these candidates are. I can tell you from my experience as a former chairman of the Board of Trustees for St. John's River State College, 21 days is quite a bit of time of that, and it's a minimum threshold. There's nothing prohibits the board from doing longer if necessary. What we've tried to do is find a balance with this bill and make sure that we have safeguards in place so that the process is laid out in the public, in the sunshine, so everyone knows going in what the process is going to be, and also sure we have the sufficient safeguards to make sure we get that deep, diverse pool of applicants as well.
Ranking Member Williams, did you have a follow-up?
Yes, sir.
You're recognized.
Okay. Concerning the closing out of community and have community involvement, has that been considered, or has anyone had a conversation with you about that?
You're recognized.
I think community involvement is inherent in the very nature of what we're doing. Board of Trustees meetings are all done in the public. These are all publicly considered public officials. Everything is done in the public, and that's, like I mentioned earlier, what this does not do is make any of that process happen in darkness. So we want to make sure is we have ample time so everyone knows going into the process what the ground rules are going to be for the search, salary ranges all discussed in the public, the process, selection process, procedures to be used are done in the public. And then once the applicants are provided, those meetings where the applicants identifying information are made known are done what's called in the shade, which means they are done outside the public, but there are sufficient safeguards in place to ensure that there's accountability. So, for example, every meeting that takes place in the shade has to be recorded in its entirety. There are no off-the-record conversations. All that is done to ensure there's transparency and accountability.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Members, are there any other questions? All right. There are no amendments, and there are some appearance cards. Karen Morian, United Faculty of Florida, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Dr. Karen Morian. I represent United Faculty of Florida, which represents all of the full-time faculty at all 12 of our state universities. We represent the graduate assistants, both research and teaching, at four of those universities. And we represent the full-time faculty at 16 of our colleges. There are certain things that I want to let you know that this bill might do, would do, could do, but I want to start with what it will not do. It will not improve the pool of applicants that our colleges and universities have been receiving. We have quality candidates from all over the country, including Ivy League provosts, including chancellors of other state systems. And that's just for a college, not even a university. It will not improve our standing because, as our governor and our commissioner of education repeatedly say in public, our university system is currently number one, and our college system is currently number one. We have nowhere to go up. We are the best, and this process is what got us there. The process we have now. This bill and this rule removing these searches from the sunshine will not meet the requirement of necessity for why you remove something from the sunshine. A hypothetical candidate for a hypothetical position who is hypothetically afraid that their boss might like them applying is not necessity, is not a demonstration of necessity for removing a public process that is so important to the local communities. We have 40 institutions of higher education in Florida. These are community processes that are done in the sunshine. Recording them but not giving public access to those recordings is not transparency. This does not shield the best candidates. It's always put forward. This is the third year as president that I've had to speak against a bill like this. And the main argument is that it will allow us to get better candidates because people are afraid to apply. Obviously, the best people are not afraid to apply in the sunshine, and they know they will have to do their work in the sunshine. And those are the people that we want here. We want people who will spend Floridians' dollars in the sunshine and are used to and comfortable with that process. But it will not shield the best candidates. If for some reason you attracted a better candidate than we're already getting after you pass this bill, their names will be public. If they make the cut into the finals, their names will be public. So you have not shielded the best candidate. What you have done is shielded other candidates, the also-rans. But the problem is, It also makes it so that we will not know who really were the best candidates because we will never see the names of the other candidates who are not put forward into the finals. So we won't know if we're getting the best candidates. It will not instill confidence in a college or university community that that process was not somehow corrupted. They will come in under a fog. Were they really the best candidates? How did they get there? Who were they up against? We won't know. And so it will be an uphill battle for that new president to build confidence with that college community and the community surrounding it. This is not a good idea. There's a reason we do that. Let me say what this will do. It will allow headhunters, headhunting corporations that some colleges use, to charge a large amount of money and not show their work. It possibly could, as we've seen when a bill like this was put forward in Colorado, only give us politically connected candidates. It may only give us, from a headhunting firm, one candidate for the trustees to choose from. So no choice and no oversight and no transparency as to how we got there and if they really were the best person. It will damage transparency in Florida. And so I will leave you with this thought from Bob Woodward, who helped uncover the Watergate scandal. Democracy dies in darkness. And I'd be happy to take any questions that the members might have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for being here, ma'am.
Mr. Chairman,
I know we at least have one question. Representative Mariano, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being here today. You are a fierce advocate for your members. You are always here testifying on issues that are important to you, so I appreciate that. But I just have a question regarding the definitive statement, as this will not improve the quality of our applicants. What data or information do you have to justify that claim?
You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's nice to see you again, Representative Mariano. I do know that Dr. Rich Templin has a significantly long list of the recent candidates who have applied here in Florida. I'm sure he'd be happy to provide that to you.
And follow up?
Yes, ma'am, you're recognized.
Thank you. And I know we do have a great quality pool of applicants now. However, what does this data suggest that there would not be more of those quality applicants being able to apply?
You're recognized.
Thank you. So if we're already getting the best candidates from the best places and they're doing the best job, where do we have to go up? And if they are the best candidates and they do make the cut into the finals, their names will be public. Their information will be public. And you're arguing about whether it's going to be 21 days or 45 days. That will still happen. So all this does is obscure a process. I can tell you at my school, when they hired a president a couple years ago, 72 candidates applied for a College Florida presidency. And all of that was public. And all of the search committee and all of their work was public. There were public hearings. It was very, very transparent, and we got a really great candidate from a very good pool of applicants. So if a college has 72 quality candidates applying in the sunshine, I don't know where you think you're going to go for better candidates by hiding who's applying.
Representative Fine, you're recognized.
Thank you. Representative Mariano actually asked the exact question that I was going to ask, but I'll just follow up on that because I don't know the answer to the question. So let's use your example at the college you mentioned, 72 candidates applied. So there are an awful lot of people in the world. So what is the basis to assume that there was no one better out there? Because you said we can't get anyone better than what we're getting today. On what basis do you make the claim that despite the fact there were 72 candidates, there might not be one or two or five or 10 people that might have even been better that were unwilling to apply because of the methodology that we use today? What is the basis in fact that says there is no one better that might have applied for that position?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Representative Fine, it's in the famous words, it's hard to prove a negative. But I think the requirement for necessity requires the proponents of the bill to prove that this will improve the pool. And in the 3 years I've been here testifying, I've seen no one testify in favor of this bill who made that point. And so I can tell you there is no evidence on that side either, if that's the question. But I will tell you our college system is number one. Our university system is number one. And as we operate our higher education institutions in the sunshine, whoever is hired will have to do business in the sunshine. So we want someone who is comfortable working in the sunshine. I've heard the argument people are afraid to apply. I will tell you, in academia, that is not the case. That may be in the business world or the legal world where I know some of you come from. But in academia, it's actually a feather in your cap to apply somewhere else. It is actually expected that you will apply somewhere else. And if they love you and want you back, they want you to go somewhere and get more experience and then come back and serve that institution again. And that happens a lot. And if you make the cut, your folks have the ability to say, we're sorry to see you go, or let us try to match their offer. If it's someone who is not doing a good job, who is afraid of losing their job, they're probably not doing a good job where they are, and we wouldn't want them here in Florida. Because if they're happy to see them go, we don't want them.
Yes, sir, you're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you, and I think you may have illuminated, I think, kind of the source of the frustration. So you're saying it's not an issue in academia. So that is it your contention, is it your opposition to the bill driven by the fact that you might not want people who aren't from academia and who would suffer by coming in to give an outside perspective because their names would be outed? Is it your position that that's why we shouldn't do this, because we wouldn't want someone from the legal profession or someone from the business profession who might not be steeped in the way academia has always been working, and this bill might open it up to those folks? Is that really the reason you're in opposition to the bill?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I'm not sure what the air quotes for academics was, but I will give you an example. President Thrasher from Florida State University came from outside academia. The brouhaha about him being hired was the attempt to circumvent the transparent process at Florida State. Once they opened that up and they had the community meetings and they had the town halls and they had the conversations with all the stakeholders, including students, staff, faculty, and community stakeholders, that built trust so that when President Thrasher came in, that had all dissipated. And so what you're doing is you're going to try and bring in people under that cloud. What I will ask is, if academia is not pushing for this change, what that says to me based on your question is that it is people outside academics trying to change a process that is working. And so it is not an attempt to keep those people out. It is to make them play on the same level and transparent playing field as everyone else.
Vice Chair McLean, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for being here this morning. We appreciate that. Is there anything in the bill that would preclude the Board of Trustees or the Board of Governors or whoever's going to make the decision from not accepting the way the process, you know, if they ended up with one candidate or if they end up with 100 candidates, is there anything that precludes them from making that final decision?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, the trustees make the final decision either way. It is about the process and how they get the recommendations and the finalists that they get that we're questioning.
Mr. Chairman, follow up.
Yes, sir, you're recognized.
Thank you. I think the question I asked was, is there anything that precludes them from, if they felt like the process wasn't the one that they wanted to follow, or if they felt like that they didn't get qualified candidates, do they make the final decision?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought I answered that. Yes, they still make the final decision as they do now. It's about the transparency of the process that we have an issue.
Mr. Chairman, about, yes, they could make a decision about the process as well.
No, if you change the law. Sorry, Mr.
No, you're fine.
Sorry. No, if you change the law, then they cannot open that process back up. This body and the floor and the legislature will have closed that process down, and they will not have the choice to expose those names by the process as is now public.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, any other questions? Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes, ma'am. Richard Templin, Florida AFL-CIO. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With the committee's indulgence, I just want to gush a little bit. We used to do this quite a bit, Mr. Chairman, and I haven't had an opportunity to be in front of your committee this session. So,
yes, sir.
This is very cool. I just want to start by sharing that the supporters of this bill and the questions and Representative Garrison's approach, it's reasonable, right? It sounds reasonable. Because we're all based on our experience that, yeah, if you work for a firm and they find out that you're looking to work for another firm, you could get canned. It's reasonable. But as was alluded to earlier, that is not how the academy works. That assumption that you're making is faulty. Now, Dr. Moran alluded to it. The way that the academy works is that, yes, you are encouraged to apply to other places. As a matter of fact, one of the main ways that faculty members and administrators get raises is to apply somewhere else and then return for a counteroffer. And if you're doing a good job, your dean's going to meet that counteroffer. And it works the same at the higher administration levels. If there's a president who is doing a great job at a university, and it's discovered that they're applying someone else, that university is going to move heaven and earth to keep them. So making this assumption that we're not getting the best and brightest because their fear of retribution for applying somewhere else, it's just not accurate. And this is the sixth year that we've had to have these conversations. And anyone who has an academic background, I came out of the academy before I did this work, anyone with an academic background who understands how it works will tell you, no, that's not really a problem. That's not really an issue. So, as again was alluded to earlier, look, these are community events. I was deeply involved with the search process that brought us President Thrasher. I knew Senator Thrasher. I knew Representative Thrasher, and quite frankly, we opposed Senator Thrasher at the time. And the way that it worked, once the process was opened up and the controversy about it being shielded was over, it was a great experience. There were public hearings. Everybody got to get up at a microphone like this and say, oh, wow, I really love this candidate. I really love this candidate. And different people weighed into the board and the search committee so that search committee could make a decision, just like what you're doing now, exactly what you're doing now, taking public input. I mean, imagine how much easier this would be if the bills were secret. If we didn't get to see the legislation, no one would come and speak because they wouldn't know until after it was done. And so we had town halls, we had all kinds of stuff. And it was a real coming together of the community. And there were three candidates. And President Thrasher got the job. I ran into President Thrasher at a luncheon about 4 or 5 months after he was hired. And he was joking, as any of you know President Thrasher, he was joking around saying, well, you guys sure didn't want me for the job, you know. And, I was a little nervous, like, oh, sorry. And then he hit me on the arm, as he does. He says, don't worry about it, Rich. That was the best thing that ever happened to me. He said, I got to hear everybody's concerns. They got to hear from me. And it was the best thing that could have happened. And since that time, he is one of the most popular presidents in Florida state history. And the reason for that is because of the open process, the Sunshine Law. I also just want to say, we throw around Sunshine Law exemptions pretty routinely in this process. But keep in mind, the Sunshine Law is a guaranteed right. It is a right in Florida's Constitution. It's just like the right to free speech. It's just like the right to own a firearm. It's a basic right. Every time you do an exemption, you're taking somebody's rights away to watch, participate in the government that they pay for. And so if you're going to take this right away, it should be based on a compelling case. As a matter of fact, statutes and the Constitution says exactly that. It says such exemptions to this act should be based on a compelling reason, narrowly construed and compelling. This isn't narrowly construed, and there's no compelling evidence. And yes, some of the questions are asking us to prove a negative. How do I prove something that hasn't happened yet? But we know what's happened. We know that we've had 6 successful searches over the past 7 years, and I won't belabor the point and go through them all, but it was the list that was referred to earlier. And when I scan this list from 2017, 2016, 2018, 2019, I see chancellors of entire university systems on this list. I see deans, I see presidents, I see provosts, another president, all the top talent. And everybody that we hired in the sunshine made our system number one like it is today. So I completely understand the motivation for this legislation. It seems reasonable. But there's no compelling case here. You're taking away the rights of your constituents, and we just don't need it in an academic setting. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask him, do you mind?
Yeah, sure. You're recognized for.
Thank you. Just a couple questions. You talked about the searches all being successful. Is it your contention that the search at UCF that happened a number of years ago that led to an internal candidate who shortly thereafter had to resign in a scandal after misappropriating $85 million because it was an internal candidate handpicked by the previous president? Do you define that as a successful search?
You're
Mr. Chairman?
Even though he's going after my university, you're still recognized.
When we look at that case, and we have, much of the reason that candidate had to leave in disgrace was politics. There's question as to whether the direct involvement of that person in the misappropriation scandal. So I don't believe that has anything to do with the process being in the sunshine or not. As a matter of fact, you're encouraging that type of thing by putting it in secret, because then the decision's made behind closed doors and a hand-picked favorite is given the job, which could lead to even more corruption.
Do you have a follow-up?
I don't want to pick on UCF anymore, right. Mr. Chairman.
Go Knight. Speaking of UCF, Representative Mariano, you're recognized.
Char John, thank you for being here today. And you mentioned the point about President Thrasher. Would you say that he is a popular president because he is doing a great job as president or because it was an open process?
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, I'm saying that one of the things that helped him do a great job is the goodwill and trust that he was able to build up during a public process. Look, as soon as the position was open, the rumor was it's going to be John Thrasher. And that created a lot of fear and speculation on behalf of the entire university community. Then when the Board of Trustees said, you know, we've looked around, we've only found one candidate, and that's John Thrasher. That led to anger and outrage. And if that process, if the Board of Trustees had not made the wise decision to go back, work with a search firm, generate a long list of candidates, present those candidates to the community, if that process hadn't happened, President Thrasher's success would be nothing like it is today, because it was working together with faculty, staff, and everyone else that allowed him to have success. And I believe he would tell you the same thing.
Follow-up?
Yes, ma'am, you're recognized.
So are you saying that his success is entirely based upon that process and not due to the merit of his work as the president of Florida State University?
You're recognized.
No, not at all. But we have, go back to nights and sports. We have coaches, and coaches can do a fantastic job. But if the coaches don't have the full support of their team members and they're not working collaboratively, they're not going to find the same success.
Yes, ma'am, you're recognized.
Thank you. And so as you alluded to him being the sole pick and they had to go back and add more, is my understanding that this bill allows for more than one at the in the finalist position. Do you think that with the success of President Thrasher, as you recognize, that with other candidates such as like himself that are not part of the Academy currently, with his success, would you agree that having more candidates that are able to apply due to these protections would be a good thing for the university system?
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, I'll quote the First Amendment Foundation on this. They said in a letter multiple years that knowing who was not selected is just as important as knowing who was eventually selected. And we firmly believe that if we're going to continue to diversify our university system, if we're going to continue to try to promote people of color and women, that process has got to be open so that everyone can see the full pool of candidates and there's public pressure to make those decisions.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Fine, you're recognized.
Thank you. Just thank you for the second bite at the apple. Just one more question. You talked about the importance of knowing who doesn't
win. You're kind of
hitting
back there.
I know. It's all right. Is there anything that stops, if this bill were to become law, is there anything that prevents someone who's applying for the job, who wants people to know because they're from academia, where there is no consequence? In fact, you're saying it's applauded, so they might want people to know that they've applied. Is there anything stopping those candidates from saying, hey, I applied for this job, just wanted everybody to know? Or is there anything that stops them from asking the search committees to make it public? Is there anything that stops it? Anyone who wants it to be public for it to be known that they applied? Does this bill prevent them from doing that?
You're right,
Chairman. I haven't read anything in the bill that would prevent that. But again, the Sunshine Law is an incumbency on government, right? It's a limit that's been placed on government by our Constitution. And so you have to ask yourself, if you're going to remove that incumbency, why would it happen? And keep in mind that these people are some of the most powerful unelected persons in our state. They control budgets of billions of dollars when you factor in foundation money. They control the lives of tens of thousands of faculty and staff. And then, of course, our students themselves. The idea, and our trustees who do a great job, but they're also political appointees. And so the idea that you're going to have these unelected, powerful people appointed by trustees who were politically appointed with no oversight by the public, that's kind of scary. This is just all about oversight. It's about allowing the public to have a say in their government because they have the information to have that say.
All right. Thank you very much for being here. It's good to see you.
That was fun, Mr. Chair. Let's do it again.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Come back and see us. Matthew Latta, United Faculty of Florida. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. And he waves in opposition for those that didn't hear. Kristen Whitaker, Board of Governors State University System. I believe she left, but she is a proponent. Members, is there debate? Representative Fine in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I've had the privilege to vote on this bill the several times and had the privilege to chair Higher Education Appropriations. My successor also sits in here today. And I can tell you, we have a lot of great university presidents. I had the privilege to meet many of them. And I agree that, you know, we are the number one system in the country, but that doesn't mean that we can't be better. I mean, I tend to, when my son, you know, gets a 96 or a 97% in one of his classes, I don't go, all right, you can work a little bit less, a 92 is all it takes. I say, look, let's keep going until we get to 100. I think the fundamental premise behind the opposition of this bill, they talked about incumbency on government. I think the real phraseology should have been incumbency on academia. The idea is that it should only be academics who are picked to be in our universities. And I don't have a problem with academics competing, but we do have issues in academia. I referenced the scandal at UCF. It was a large scandal. $85 million was all but stolen from taxpayers to build a building that there was no evidence was actually ever needed. It was a large scandal that we had to deal with here in the legislature. Even right now, we're seeing an issue, for example, at the University of Florida, where conservative groups are being targeted based on COVID standards that are not being applied to other groups. So I think there always is the idea that we want as many people applying for these things to have as competitive a process as can. And look, I don't come from academia. My father did. I wanted to. He told me he'd never talk to me again if I became a professor. He wanted someone in our family to go make money. But I went and chose a different path. And I know in the business world, if you have a job and you go apply for another one and your existing employer finds out, there are consequences. And I want those folks to apply. Do I want them to get picked? Only if they're the best. Only if they're the best. But I don't agree at the fact that we had 72 candidates out there for a job doesn't mean there's not another 72 who might not be as good or might be better. And I think we should want that funnel to be as open as possible. And we should not have a process that limits. It's sort of like having an eclipse. We say it's in the sun, but it's not entirely in the sun if only a third of the sun can be seen, because two-thirds of the people who might be interested are afraid to apply. So I applaud you for running this bill. I think it will make our number one university system in the country even better by improving the pipeline of people who apply for these jobs. So good job.
Vice Chair McClain in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Garrison, thank you for bringing this bill forward. Obviously, I've seen it a few times since I've been here, but it's a good bill, and I think the point that I'd like to make today, members, is that there's nothing in this bill that precludes the Board of Governors or the Board of Trustees of the individual universities or state colleges from making a final decision, which would be up to and including if they felt like the process wasn't to their liking, they could do that. I was in local government. We did it. We would get a lot of things brought to us. And if we didn't think the process was right, or we didn't think we ended up with the best candidate, we'd have staff go rework it, bring it back again. And there's nothing that precludes the final decision being made by the Board of Governors, the Board of Trustees. Great bill. I'm up on it.
Members, anybody else wishing to debate? All right, seeing none. I will just say, Representative Garrison, you have done a better job on this bill than the last person who sponsored this. The last year or two. And with that, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Chair. And just a couple of points. I don't want to belabor it. I know it's been a long debate and discussion. I would point out to the opponents of the bill, I know everyone's read the bill, but sometimes details can get lost in the shuffle. I'd point them out to line 39 of the bill, which specifically says that there is a requirement that there be a group. My Samford University education tells me that's more than one. A group of individuals and applicants, plural, who are required to be put forward. So this notion that somehow this bill would result in one single employee being decided behind closed doors and foisted on an unsuspecting public, it just doesn't jive with the text of the bill. So I would encourage folks to look to that. In terms of the comments about the academy being different, we're not talking about a tenured faculty here. The dynamics in that is different. We're talking about high-level executive administrative folks, many of whom serve at-will positions in a hyper-competitive environment. And if we can get more of those applicants, especially those young emerging leaders who don't have the security, otherwise the folks who've been there forever, we want those folks who are hungry, ambitious, who want to serve, to have the freedom to apply. And if they're a finalist, great. I agree. It might be a little different if you're a finalist. But we want to encourage that diversity of a diverse applicant pool. We want the young, the hungry, the ambitious to want to come to the best university and state college system in the nation, and that's here in Florida. Lastly, I'd say, just to echo Representative Fine's comments, you're either moving forward or you're moving back. There's no standing still. We believe this bill would move us forward. We all know how much leadership matters. Our institutions of higher learning deserving of the absolute best. I ask for your favorable consideration.
Thank you, Representative Garrison. Missy, please call the roll.
Representative Zalupas?
Yes.
Andrade? Harrington?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Ferreira?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Hunshofsky?
Yes.
Lamarca?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
McCurdy?
No.
Morales?
No.
Trabulsi?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Valdez?
No.
Williams?
No.
Chair Latvala?
Yes.
15 yeas, 4 nays.
Members, by your vote of 15-4, HB 997 will be reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chair.
Next, let's hear from Chair Masullo, House Bill 723, Juvenile Justice Education Programs. And I apologize, Representative Fine made you wait, but you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And without giving you any undue accolades, you can present any of my bills anytime you want. I think you do an amazing job. Members, HB 723, Juvenile Justice Education Programs, is perhaps one of the most important things we can do as a society to keep our young people out of our prisons and to put them back on a path to where they can be productive members of our society. This bill just provides clarity to those programs. It updates how the juvenile justice systems operate. It provides flexibility in calculating hours instead of days. It increases the percent of the FEFP generated by students in juvenile justice programs that must be spent on instruction, and clarifies those programs as far as their formula-based categoricals. It updates the requirements of contracts between the school districts and those programs and provides time frames for those contracts with a very small penalty if those time frames are violated. It has no significant physical to the state unless those districts are in some sort of delinquent payment of the contracts that they've signed. And that, Mr. Chair, is the bill.
Thank you, Chair Masullo. Are there any questions on the bill? Seeing none, there is one amendment. Chair Masullo, you're recognized to explain Amendment 080161.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment just basically gives the non-residential providers, those providers where the particular individual is not living, the hourly option, and it is not available for those residential providers. It also removes the April 1st date to ensure the timeline for execution of contracts works for all the juvenile justice providers and takes into account new contracts that may be in outside of that window. And that is the amendment.
Thank you, Chair Masullo. Do members have any questions on the amendment? Is there any objection? Show the amendment adopted without objection. We are back on the bill as amended. There is an appearance card. Christian Miner from Florida Juvenile Justice Association waves in support. Members, is there debate? Seeing none, Chair Masullo, you recognize the close.
And I'll wave close and just ask for your favorable support.
Thank you, Chair Masullo. Please call the roll.
Representatives Zalupas?
Yes.
Andrade? Arrington?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Barrero?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Panchowski?
Yes.
LaMarca?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Morales?
Yes.
Rebulsi?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Chair Latvala?
Yes.
19-0.
Members, by your vote of 19-0, House Bill 723 will be reported favorably.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, have a great day.
Next, let's go to CS for HB 383 by Chair Placencia, involuntary examinations of minors. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. PCS for HB 383 requires a public school principal or designee to make reasonable attempts to notify a student's parent before the student is transported to a receiving facility for an involuntary examination, otherwise known as a Baker Act. This notification applies when a student is removed from school grounds, school transportation, or a school-sponsored activity, and that is the bill.
Thank you, Chair Placencia. Are there questions on the bill? There's one amendment. Chair Placencia, you are recognized to explain Amendment 936791.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I believe that's a strike-all, and the strike-all essentially just changes the word immediate to reasonable attempt.
Thank you, Chair Placencia. Do members have any questions on the amendment? Ranking Member Williams for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, can you define to me what's reasonable since it's a strike all for the bill itself.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ranking Member, I don't know if I could honestly describe what reasonable is. That is an excellent question. I think what the change in the language attempts to do is give a little more discretion to whether it's law enforcement or a school district, principal, assistant principal, to make sure that a child isn't sitting in a room waiting for a parent to be notified, to have access to the parent. In case that child does need immediate attention, they want to feel like the law isn't preventing them from doing that. So changing it from immediate to reasonable gives them a little bit more leeway. But as far as defining the word reasonable and what that looks like, you know, that's, I imagine a court system would determine that if it's ever challenged.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Members, are there any other questions on the amendment? Is there any objection to the amendment? Do you have an objection?
I have an objection.
Okay. Show the amendment adopted with a single objection. We are back on the bill as amended, and there are appearance cards. Christian Minor, Florida Juvenile Justice Association, waves in support. Carrie Boyd, SPLC Action Fund, waves in support. Karen Woodall, Florida Center for Fiscal and Economic Policy, waves in support. Danny McMillan, Florida PTA, is a proponent. Would you like to speak, ma'am? Okay. Thank you for being here. Members, is there debate? Representative Valdez in debate.
Thank you very much, Chair Latvala. And Representative Plasencia, thank you so much for bringing this bill forward. You know, oftentimes it's important that we allow principals to be able to be by that child's side and have that extra parental notion, if you will. You know, oftentimes when we drop our kids at home at school, we always tell our kids, at least I did, those teachers, that principal is an extension of me. And you make sure you know, do what you're told and behave, right? So I do appreciate the intent of what this bill does, and thank you so much for bringing it forward, because it'll help a lot of children and families be able to help in that coordination of care as well. So thank you very much for bringing it forward.
Representative Arrington, in debate, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative, for bringing this wonderful bill forward. I've received a lot of positive feedback on it. I did meet with the National Association of Social Workers, and they did want to talk about maybe, they asked me to maybe talk to you about maybe possibly adding them back into it so that they could be included to call in a school crisis. So I just wanted to talk to you maybe afterwards in regards to that. But I just want to thank you again, and I'm definitely up on this bill. Thank you.
Ranking Member Williams, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate this bill coming forth, but because reasonable to me may be not reasonable to you. The time frame itself is a question for me. So I am up on the bill itself, but that portion of it, I just would like to be able to sit down with you and go back and forth a little bit. Thank you.
Members, any other members wishing to debate? Seeing none, Rep. Plasencia, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, thank you for all your thoughtful comments. Ranking Member Williams, I agree with you. There are some changes we make to bills to make sure that we get the bill in a better posture, and sometimes also to get additional support that may be needed to get the bill through as well. As things happen within a school setting, it could be very different. It could be very scary for both the child and for the adult. I agree with Representative Valdez. We have wonderful teachers and principals and assistant principals and staff at our schools that care deeply about the kids. And so this is a very sensitive issue where most adults are always trying to do the right thing. Representative Arrington, I would love to talk to you afterwards and to see how we can make this bill better. And same goes to Ranking Member Williams, how we can speak afterwards and make this bill better as well. But I ask for all of your favorable support. With that, I close.
Thank you, Chair Placencia. Missy, please call the roll.
Representative Zalupas?
Yes.
Andrade? Arrington?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Barrero?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Panshofsky?
Yes.
Lamarca?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Morales?
Yes.
Trabulsi?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Chair Latvala?
Yes.
19-0.
By members, by your vote of 19-0, CS for House Bill 383 will be reported favorably.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Next, let's go to Representative Barrero, House Bill 1033, Certificate of Completion. And you are recognized to present your first bill before this distinguished committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 1033 is titled Certificate of Completion. Certificate of Completion, it allows students with a Certificate of Completion, which are those who have completed 24 credits of high school, but they haven't completed their FSA, they haven't passed their FSA or successfully completed a 2.0 GPA. So this bill makes sure that these students with a Certificate of Completion are eligible to enroll at technical schools. Currently, there are a lot of technical schools that are denying students with merely a Certificate of Completion, as opposed to a high school diploma, eligibility to enroll in these technical schools. So you have many schools who, for example, are allowing students to, some of them to allow to become medical assistants, phlebotomists, barbers, cosmetologists, and then some students are being denied merely because they have a certificate of completion, and the technical school requires them to have a high school diploma. So this bill, it mandates so that these technical schools require this, allow for students with merely a certificate of completion to further their careers, enroll, and become eligible to apply at these technical schools. And that is a bill.
Thank you very much, Representative. Are there questions on the bill? Representative Bell for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you, and thank you for bringing this great bill forward and being your first bill. As you know, my family and I, we are in the bee business, apiaries. Are there any technical schools that's going to offer the study of bees?
Are there any?
You are recognized.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will get back to you with that information. I have data on all the technical schools that are currently established, the programs that they offer. And I think that is a great career to study. As a matter of fact, I wore a mask that promoted, bees in our communities. So I support that.
Follow-up, please.
Yes, ma'am. You're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you. I appreciate you getting me numbers back. And I'd also like to know if there will be any type of schools that will be producing queen bees, basically, is what I need to know.
Thank you, Representative.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I will certainly get back to you with information on whether or not we can promote the study of queen bees as well.
Representative Lamarca for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Barrero, do you have any idea how many times Representative Bell used the word bee in her questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would venture to guesstimate somewhere between 3 and 5 times.
Thank you.
Do you normally just guesstimate when you do answers during your bill presentations? You're recognized?
Mr. Chair, I normally do not.
Okay. Vice Chair McLean, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the last committee stop, Representative Barrero was asked to tell us how many periods were in his bill. And he did provide that information to us, but we would like to know if that number has changed since the last committee stop.
You are recognized.
Vice Chair, that number has not changed since then. There are 26 periods in this bill.
Any other?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm concerned because he just said that he was guesstimating about the 3 to 5 for Representative Bell. So I'm not sure if I can trust the 26 periods at this point. So I think you'll need to provide that information to the members of this committee later today once you can count.
Does that include, yeah, and does that include the periods in the Florida statute citations?
Mr. Chair, if I can first answer Vice Chair's question, I will look back at the recording of this committee stop and make sure that we count how many times both bees and queen bees were mentioned in her comments, and as well as refer back to the whether or not in the citation the periods were counted. However, Mr. Chair, I do believe that they were counted.
All righty. Any other questions for the young freshman, who seems to be a little bit more prepared than Representative Butena was? Any other questions? All righty. There are no amendments. There is an appearance card. Danny McMillan, Florida PTA. Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much. And she waves in support. Members, is there debate? Representative Mariano in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in all seriousness, thank you, Representative, for bringing this great bill forward. I had a constituent that had this exact issue where she was not able to pass the FSA, had perfect attendance in high school, and because of this law not being in place, she is not able to enter her cosmetology program, and therefore, if she couldn't pass the FSA, her argument was, how is she supposed to pass five sections of the GED? And so this bill would have allowed her to go and pursue a career that she was very passionate about and excited for, and hopefully now she'll be able to do so. So I really appreciate you bring this bill forward today. Thank you.
Any other Representative Tribolsi in debate?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Barrero. I know we've had a couple of conversations regarding this bill, and I just want to thank you for the thoughtfulness of this bill and how it pertains to the people that are going to be taking advantage of it and the doors and pathways that are going to be open to them. I don't think it's within our legislative right here, but I sure do wish that we could add a component that people who fall under this category could also be able to enter the military, because you can't enter the military without a high school diploma, but you sure are on the right track, and I appreciate it.
Representative Valdez in debate.
Thank you very much, Chair Latvala. And with all kidding aside, we had conversations in several of our, in a couple of our committees where we talk about how many students or how many Floridians do not have a high school diploma. And that number is really began in the year 2000 when we implemented the FCAT. And the FCAT had the same type of punishment, that if you didn't pass the FCAT, you would receive a certificate of completion. So this bill, I'm very proud to be able to be a prime co-sponsor on it, because this is my heart as well. Serving on the school board of Hillsborough County Public Schools for 14 years and actually participating in all graduations and understanding that all children that was walking by in their graduation day, not everyone really did have a high school diploma. So their dreams, their ideas, their wanting to move forward were really stopped at that point. This bill will definitely help many of those students that will have that opportunity. These students can come back to the school district for one more year only for the purpose of being able to obtain that concordance score or pass the FSA to obtain their high school diploma. So although people might say that this bill will discourage them from getting their high school diploma, I would say not, because they could still continue to take their ACT and prepare themselves for that next level. And sometimes it's just about that language acquisition, right, of being able to be proficient enough in the language to pass a high stakes exam. So members, I urge you to vote on favorably on this bill, because it would help many, many, many of our students in our districts that are really able, willing to go to school, study, while they're reinforcing their English language and then being able to pass a test. So this is a great bill. Thank you very much, Representative Borrero, for bringing this forward and allowing me to co-sponsor this with you, because this is, if any piece of legislation that we do this year that will really, really help kids, is this one right here. Thank you very much.
Representative Lamarca in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief and just let you know ahead of time I'm voting for both your bills because they're very good bills, but having had such a good comment from your co-sponsor, I would probably waive close.
Any other members wishing to debate? Thank you, Representative Barrera, you're recognized to close.
Just two brief comments, Mr. Chair. Representative Tribolsi, thank you for mentioning that. I think that's an incredible proposal that you mentioned and you're presenting before me in conversation. I did ask about that, and from what I gather, I'll qualify it. Those are federal requirements that I don't think we would have the jurisdiction to be able to tap into. However, I would certainly be willing to look into how we can, as a legislative body, ask the federal government to sponsor changing that requirement to allowing students who have a certificate of completion to serve their country. And I would just say thank you very much, Representative Valdez. I am honored to have you here as a prime co-sponsor. Many people in my community in South Florida, they come here as immigrants, and I went, to high school with them. I went to Felix Ferrella Public High School, and there were a lot of immigrants that went to that high school, and they were just bad test takers because they had a language barrier and learning the language. And a lot of these students didn't graduate with a high school diploma, but they do have the certificate of completion. We shouldn't be preventing them from trying to further their education, further their careers, and by passing this bill, it will help and enable them to do so. So with that, I close.
Thank you, Representative Barrera. Ms. Please call the roll.
Representative Zalupas?
Yes.
Andrade? Barrington?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Barrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Benchofsky?
Yes.
Lamarca?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Morales?
Yes.
Tribolsi?
Yes.
Pep?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Chair Latvala?
Yes.
19-0.
Members, by your vote of 19-0, House Bill 1033 will be reported favorably. Next, let's take up CS for House Bill 1553, Victims of Communism Day, by Representative Barrera. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to just really quickly read us a quick drive-through history about the history of communism. So between 1917 through 1923, a brutal civil war took place where over 200,000 people were killed at the hands of the Bolsheviks. 300,000 more died from execution, imprisonment, and forced labor camps. The Bolsheviks abolished private property. They restricted speech, assembly, and religion. Joseph Stalin, who seized power shortly thereafter, gained control of agricultural land owned by individuals in the Ukraine and converted these properties into state-owned properties, forcing and punishing resistant farmers to produce minimum quotas. This resulted in massive famine. Millions of people and entire communities starved to death. In China, an estimated 65 million people died from hunger due to the misdistribution of food under Mao Zedong's attempt to export socialism. In 1959, Chinese communists carried out a massacre of an estimated 92,000 people as Tibetans resisted Chinese expansion into the Tibetan area. Under Fidel Castro, the Castro communist government killed between 5,000 to 8,300 through firing squads, forced labor camps, and other forms of punishment. His butchers executed roughly 15,000 prisoners. An estimated 80,000 to 200,000 deaths due to communist mass killings in North Korea and South Korea under the Viet Cong. 3 million died from war casualties as a result of North Korea's invasion of South Korea. Over the last 100 years, 100 million people have died due to what is the farce of communism. A failed system of government where one party and one regime controls all aspects of life. What this bill seeks to do is it memorializes over 100 million people who have died under communist tyranny over the last 100 years. And it requires public schools in the high school government course to have the half-credit government credit to teach on November 7th, the anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution,
how communism has decimated the lives of millions of people throughout history on November 7th. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Barrera. Are there questions on the bill? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Hemchowski, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, I just had a question on the lines 55 through 50, I guess the rest of it, where it says that students enrolled in the United States government class are required to receive at least 45 minutes of instruction. Why would this not be in the world history class that is also required in order to receive a high school diploma?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we can definitely take a look at which particular class it's taught under. This was the particular class that was suggested by our education staff and the government class. It would have very little impact on public schools' education curriculum. It would be just for one day for 45-minute class.
Yes, ma'am, for follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. And this isn't I'll try and form it in a question. So you would be willing to look into that. And the reason I ask is, especially for those students who are AP students, the study of communism is already part of the world history AP class, and I know how limited their classroom time is in order to prepare adequately for those AP tests. So I just thought that might be. So I would appreciate it if you would look into that.
So you will look into that for Representative Hemchowski?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? All right, there are no amendments, and there are no appearance cards. Members, we're in debate. Anybody wishing to debate? Seeing none, Representative Barrera, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm very proud that this bill had passed through its first committee stop unanimously with support from both Republicans and Democrats. The same goes on the Senate side. This bill is a bill that I believe that all of us can come together on. Communism is something that is an affront to democracy, our system of government, and our Republican form of government. It robs people of their political voices. It does not tolerate dissent, whereas in our Republican democratic form of government, we encourage debate, we encourage dissent, we encourage opposition. We have people giving them a political voice, one person, one vote. I believe that this is something that we can all agree on. I would encourage your favorable support, and anyone who wants to co-sponsor this, I welcome that as well. With that, I close.
Thank you, Representative Barrera. Ms. Please call the roll.
Representatives Aloukas?
Yes.
Andrade? Arrington?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Barrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Hemchowski?
Yes.
LaMarca?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Morales?
Yes.
Trabulsi?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Chair Latvala?
Yes.
19-0.
Members, by your vote of 19-0, CS for House Bill 1553 will be reported favorably.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Members. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, is there any other business to come before the committee? Representative Fine, do you have something?
I must have missed a bill. Did we do three? We did. Oh, sorry.
Any other business come before the committee? All right. Seeing none, Representative Bush moves re-rise without objection. The meeting is adjourned.
I must not have.